This week on RSBNB Update, Croesus, RuneScape's first skilling boss, arrives, and he's a pretty fun guy. We run through his mechanics, how to get a kill, how to fail, and what's in store for public instances. We also touch on drops, accessibilities, optimal tools, and strats. This is RSBNB Update, episode 849, recorded Thursday, September 30th, 2021. Croesus the Fungi. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
It's nice to have you here. Yeah, it's good to have you here, because you were on vacation for the Nodon Front. You were at a wedding for the Glacier Front. But lo and behold, here you are for the Croesus Front.
Well, you know in a battle, Shane, you want to hold back your best troops in reserve.
And it makes a lot of sense, too, because this is a skilling boss, which I know you've been eager to jump down and get started.
Yeah, I was eagerly awaiting the arrival of Croesus.
And we're going to have a big, big discussion about that, yeah. But also continuing on from last week, Thaxi is still here with us. Welcome back.
Hey again. It's good to be back.
And we promise there's no real math this week, so...
No math today!
So it shouldn't be as in-depth as that, but last I looked, the nibbles on the mathy ones were actually doing quite well, so perhaps there's something to be said for doing a podcast about numbers, which I'm letting sit in the back of my head.
We can talk later if we get a quiet week, Shane.
You're just going to end up in some ASMR channel.
You know what my favorite thing to do would be?
Let me tell you about some damage.
He's just counting.
Oh,
no.
I think the best thing would be to do a math episode or math monthly bit with Sirion and Thaxi. Get Sirion's whiteboard out and you guys could trade off.
We've had a couple of good back and forths. That could be fun.
But nonetheless, of course, the Croesus Front brings the first skilling boss to RuneScape, hopefully the first of any number of skilling bosses to come out. But alongside that, and, you know, there's just so much to unpack with this. The entire front has advanced, and this is something we want to dive into more, but there's many, many lore ramifications about that. So what we're going to do this week is we're going to keep the focus on Croesus and everything surrounding Croesus and the battle, and address some other main things of this week's update. But we do have to have a huge lore discussion on everything from the god banter that was said this week to new folks who have appeared on the front himself, like backstory, and is there for some odd reason. And if you go to talk to him, he has a really enthralling dialogue line with him. So we're going to have a chat about Backstorian and everything that is happening in all of the God Wars, Elder God Wars fronts next week on the show, because quite honestly, we've never seen anything like this before. And we're finally starting to learn, I think, Tanis, about what Mods, Warden, and Osborne meant when they said that, you know, this isn't going to be like your previous God Wars dungeons. There's going to be a narrative element. They're going to move and they're going to evolve over time. It's going to feel like a war. And I think we're starting to feel that this week, aren't we?
I think so. You know, I definitely think that laid the groundwork to change people's perceptions.
Yeah.
Not this contained dungeon space.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, this is pretty expansive. And that... You know, that has its pluses and minuses in some ways. But I think they did a good job setting the expectations for this. And then in my opinion, I mean, it's pretty much met them every time. And, you know, of course, we'll talk about the boss, you know, in a little bit. But I'm really of two minds with it. And no matter what, I'm so happy to see skilling getting, you know, not that we haven't had attention, but not in this way. And I'm glad to see them experiment. You know, we've always talked about that wow moment in skilling. We've always talked about that you know, a drop.
Yeah.
And
hard to find.
Yeah.
Hard to find.
Yeah. And it's hard. It's a hard balance to find, right? To strike. And I don't know if we're there, but I do like the ecosystem that is set up. And but you know, more on that in a bit, right?
Yeah.
They really baked the lore and the story into this God Wars in a way that they haven't for the others. We didn't know until a couple of years ago, right? That the previous God Wars dungeon was frozen in time and was a snapshot of something. And the current God Wars dungeon will end up that way, of course, but or the current Elder God Wars will, but we're watching it unfold in a way that we did not get to watch for the past two God Wars dungeons. We're really getting to see the story of it, and that, you know, they're not just appealing to the skillers and the PVMers, they're putting something out there for the Lorehounds and the Questers too.
Yeah.
And which is really cool.
And, you know, they also, I think, hit the epitome of that with the archaeology in Sintistan itself.
Yeah.
But that's, of course, an entire Lord Diggers episode that we did a couple weeks ago. We're going to dive in and just show the cutscene off for this if you haven't seen it yet. But if you want to follow along, we do have full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. But we need to have a look at this cutscene right now. Then we're going to dive straight into the Croesus fight.
I was there, in the year of Croesus. The year the fungus killed 50,000 people, and the 10th Legion were annihilated. It was the Second Age, not long after the end of the Caridian campaign. An expedition returned from the unquiet ocean with a very unusual species of fungus. The fools thought they could turn it into a weapon. A botanical plague they could unleash on the enemies of the Empire. They called it Croesus. Its spores infested the bodies of the dead, spreading and growing. They fed its slaves, tested it, burned away weakness, forced it to evolve. They did their jobs far too well. After one serious breach, they were ordered to cease their work. They didn't. Inevitably, Croesus broke free into the city again, choking the streets with its putrescent growth. Nothing could stop it. Priests and guards alike were powerless, and their bodies only served to fuel its flourishing. I was with the 10th Legion when we were recalled from the border to combat the infestation. After days of fighting, my wings ached and my dragon fire was spent. We razed miles of city to contain it. The Legion were almost completely wiped out. It still wasn't enough. In the end, Lord Zaros was forced to intervene personally. He quarantined this whole district, simply buried it beneath the earth. I thought the remains of Croesus were destroyed. They assured me they were destroyed. They say that of all the Elder Gods, Bic holds intelligent life in the greatest contempt. She must have found Croesus beneath the graveyard and revived it. Even now, it feeds on the ancient dead. It's already massacred every defender on this front. If we don't drive it back, it will tear the cathedral to pieces.
That felt almost like a short film, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's long.
I think that's the longest cutscene that they did for the Elder God
so
Wars.
Far.
But it felt
so
like
far, yeah.
It felt like a short film, and I really enjoyed watching that because when I first went in there, I of course did the easy way, and I took the PVM portal from the PVM hub, and you don't get that cutscene because it takes you right to the door. You only get that cutscene when you go in through the cathedral. But nonetheless, everybody who hasn't gone in through the cathedral should definitely go and see that cutscene for themselves. And I don't know why I'm calling it a cutscene; it's really a RuneScape short. So well done to the team on that. Oof. And that's where we're going to pick up the lore next week, because there's so many little nuggets that we can pull on from there in that cutscene. So I was very pleased with that. But as the Croesus front is dead already. There's dead guards. There's a few skilling nodes inside for woodcutting, hunter, fishing, and mining. And how do we feel about these skilling nodes, I wonder? Inside the actual front.
I wasn't very impressed.
I wasn't either. They're a decent XP rate for endgame. They're an option if somebody really wants to AFK, wants to do something differently. I think you have better choices for most of those skills, yeah. Though.
Like, are you supposed to use, like, an adze or something for the woodcutting one so it consumes all the timber fungus? Or are you supposed to porter it? Or what are you supposed to do with it?
You should porter that. That's going for, like, 10K.
What?
Yeah. Jeez. So... Really? So those the fungus from each of those, it's the only source for them, and they're used in the creation of the seed bag item.
Right, but you only need a handful.
You need to have 500 of each for the seed bag. Only need a handful to make any of the armors or any of the offhands or anything. But the seed bag, for some reason, requires 500 of each. So, yeah, that's why those are expensive.
That's
the
bonkers.
Interesting thing.
Because I went there on launch day, and they were selling for 2 GP on the Grand Exchange.
Oh, but the Grand Exchange doesn't reflect any of the prices at Croesus.
No. I tried to sell them on the GE. They were only for that price. So you're saying I should go back for that then?
Yeah. On the first day, they were only... People didn't know the crafting recipes for anything. Now that we understand and people are trying to make those things, people have realized they have value. The issue with them is that, of course, like some things like the mining, where you have to progress bar to get a single produce out of it, is much slower than something like the hunter and the fishing. And so some of them are much more expensive than others.
And my trouble with this was I found it a little bit harder to follow, whatever you want to call this one, the time stride or the shiny. I thought it was a lot harder to follow than it is with mining and what's the other one? Archaeology.
Time
sprite. Like a rock opportunity or time sprite. This is hard, the particles on this that are like the yellow are a little harder to see in the lighting. I agree.
And it's they're harder. I don't know. You got to spin your camera in a lot of different angles. I was finding to catch them. So I don't know. I just found it because it's a cool setting, right? I mean, I love the setting. I love the graphics. I love what they did.
Once again, top tier on the environment art.
Yeah, but that by its very nature, with the angles and stuff, sometimes I was just having a hard time seeing the different soldiers and stuff like that.
And the same thing happens in the boss, where it's very challenging to watch the boss. It's almost impossible to see the boss animations and still watch what's going on around your character, which I am not a fan of.
Yeah. Welcome to my world, Daxi. Welcome
I know. This
to
time,
my
this time
world.
It's the developers have put me there. I hear you, Dennis.
So I guess the general sentiment of this then is that they are good for selling for the people making the seed sack and whatnot.
Specifically mining and woodcutting.
Mining and woodcutting. Yes. Okay. But you're not probably going to go there to find the next greatest thing in woodcutting, mining, fishing, or hunter training.
No, there's much better XP. Much better methods out there. And I don't anticipate these to stay to keep their value like that either. If people were doing it, then again, it's really not that good of a training method. So maybe they will stay because not many people's gonna do it.
And there will be some demand for the fungus as well, because the funguses can be used to create soups and potions, which are helpful. They last, I believe, for a single encounter in the Croesus fight. I've not played around with them yet. But there is some small demand for that, and it may be that if those drop to where they're 3-4K, I think most people doing the boss might be willing to pay that per encounter, given the amount of money you get from the boss. So, maybe they'll stay, will even out. I would be unsurprised to see them even out, 3 to 8K a piece, which is still, it's an alternative option if you didn't want to be around a ton of people for your skilling and you wanted to just be in one place. Like, there is potentially a market for it.
And we don't know with the soups how much they improve by, because it just says it increases your mining efficiency or whatnot and reduces one of the other stats, right? We don't know what the exact
number I think somebody gave me numbers. Somebody gave me numbers earlier this week, but I don't know the source for it, so
Skillers are just like PVMers with that, like they'll they want every last tiny bit that you can get.
It helps for the boss if you're struggling.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. And you know, I don't think we're overlooking anything here. I spent some time in there. It seemed as though that for the Hunter one in particular, you could get Troves and Anima faster than you can get it at the mining and woodcutting one. Does that sound about right?
Now, that one I liked the best out of all of them, just because AFK Hunter and Pre-Gather. Yeah, that's the other nice part.
And those Troves are nice. We've got Tier 3 Elder Troves now. They're each worth... My average has been about 120k, but if you get up to an Onyx, they can be even higher, 120, 150k. They're pretty hefty. That honestly might make the skilling worth it alone, because those things are worth pretty good money from the skilling nodes.
And I think what you'd have to do to test that is you'd have to run a few hours there and just to see what you come out with at the end of it in terms of profit. And of course, the question is this going to stay up over time? We don't know yet. There's lots of big questions about that, of where we're going to wind up on this. So with that, I feel confident in just moving at this point into the actual boss fight itself and some of the things we've learned since last week about how these items are going to be created. In particular with Croesus Flakes, or is if this was your morning cereal, cornflakes, I guess?
I guess if you like spores and fungal matter in your cereal.
Yogurt. Just have to make sure that when you eat it, you don't jump to a different universe, right, Tanis?
Hey, you never know.
Well, you can actually do that in the boss.
Alice in Wonderland?
Starts at Discovery. Spore Drive.
Yeah.
They have a propulsion method in that TV series based on the power of mushrooms.
Yes.
Anyways.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about mushrooms after, as one of the mechanics. So,
yes, let's do a very, very brief, I promised everybody last week that we would do quick updates this week on rare drops. We're going to spend less than a minute on this. Crafting schemes for things, we didn't know them. And for basically everything, it's dropped as an incomplete item. Almost everything you compare with a couple of little tertiary items, which are cheap, relatively speaking, and a bunch of Croesus Flakes, plus the main drop item, and that's kind of it. We talked about the armor last week. We weren't sure how large the shield was going to be on it. From the live stream, I expected that it was going to be pretty hefty and large. The number is about 2,000, which seems a lot. 2,000 hit points for your high-level players seems large, but in terms of most base tank encounters where you're wearing tank armor, that's half of a boss hit, if that. Incredibly impactful.
And we have also heard from people, in general, from both Bears and David, that the entire new armor set has effectively, at this point, if you wear that and play your cards right, makes Vindicta, as an example, 100% AFKable.
Yeah, quite a few things. And you can do similar things with the 290 armor that exists in-game currently. The defensive powers of them are fairly comparable. This is just a good buyable option, so yeah. I'm a fan.
Before we do that, we should say that you make the armor by just combining it with Croesus Flakes, one of the simplest.
Correct, yeah. Crafting schemes for everything in there is, other than the seed bag, which is a bunch of those fungus from outside, everything else is flakes and a couple of tertiary items.
The book.
Book drop page. Drop rate, we weren't sure how quickly the pages were going to drop, and turns out they drop very quickly, so the book is a very desirable item for our clue hunters who don't want to camp hellhounds and Pryptinus elves. Crazy, I know.
Yeah, and oddly, this is the most expensive item out of this run so far, I think.
It seems like it's giving you 15 to 18 clues per page, mostly kind of mediums, hard deletes, which is 45 minutes, you're getting that many clues, and it ignores the clue caps. You can just stack up to the 10,000 caskets, whatever, so our clue hunters who don't get a ton of quality of life updates like that are making this an expensive item to have around, which is nice for the boss. That's all I really had for the book. The Arrowhead, we weren't sure how fast they would drop and how fast they would be consumed. They are dropped at a pretty decent rate. You can get, seems like, up to about 200 hour arrowheads per hour from wood cutting, probably slightly more from mining. Right. But of course, we weren't sure about how fast these are consumed. And generally speaking, I'm going to say these will be consumed much, much faster than they come into game. I mean, you're using 13 of the splinter arrows, those woodcutting ones, every time you target a new creature or a creature changes phase. So if people want to camp them and use those arrow tips, they will be very expensive.
I feel very happy about this with my prospects for 120 woodcutting now.
Yes, there are three people on this podcast tonight who have already bought the fire torch for the woodcutting. So we are all pleased that the arrowheads will seem, at least in my estimation, that they will stay pricey.
And I will also say for the woodcutting offhand, it has made cutting elders feel like cutting magics instead, I think, in terms of the amount of logs you get.
Plus 20%. Extra logs plus 6% mining chance. That's very nice.
Yeah. I am happy with that. So. That's a big... I don't know why that's a sigh of relief, but I just feel pleased about that.
We are glad that we wanted a skilling boss that was high effort to be worth high money, and it seems like this is a skilling boss that is going to give skillers good amounts of money for the effort they put in.
All right.
So we are on board with it.
Well, let's jump in then, because there's going to be lots of questions about how exactly you take down a skilling
boss. Let's talk about the fight. General requirements we're going to say for this. I'm going to echo what Jadix has said, in that about 80 plus in the four gathering skills is helpful. It's one of the cases where you do want to have all four of those skills gathered, leveled up, because your level, including if your level is lowered, whatever your current level is the level that is used when you're calculating damage to the core of the boss. So having that be maxed is very helpful. And that also obviously impacts your gathering speed, which will impact kill times for the boss. So 80 plus in those gathering skills, definitely going to be something you probably want to look into before trying this.
Yeah, and it makes sense, because outside on the front, you need level 88 at minimum to harvest those resources outside the boss encounter.
Right.
Yeah, think of it as, I mean, this is DPS for the skilling side, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Gear recommendations are exactly what you'd expect if you're gathering from elsewhere, right? So your skilling outfits all apply, all very helpful. Your the auras, same story. Familiars that have invisible boosts on them, they do work. So your beaver, your Arctic bear, gargoyle, and rock
titan.
Lobster. Rock lobster, yeah, or lava titan, or wolpertengo, your choices there. Other things that you want to have with you when you go, inventory-wise. We're looking at, there's a mechanic that requires you to have logs, so protean logs, or if you have the Orthon furnace core, that provides the same function as having logs in your inventory.
Yeah, like a few dozen protean logs would be good for that.
Yeah. Although the Orthon Furnace Core and the Fire Torch will free you with a much shorter animation than having logs, so it actually is something it's improved if you're looking to really camp this boss. Like I said, offhands, both offhands for the new offhands and both of the old skilling offhands do work for this. They have the same effects. It's if your Orthon Furnace Core is the same as the Fire Torch, and the new hammer is the same as the construction and crafting offhand, which is the constructing and crafting one will increase the speed at which you repair statues in one phase of the fight, and we'll talk through that in a moment. Other things to have in your inventory, a handful of restore flasks. I normally bring about 5, and that's enough to last me the better part of an hour.
Yep.
If you have the mobile perk, either on your relics or on a piece of equipment, that's helpful. With the offhands, obviously, they're not augmentable, and so I do have I'm just using the relic personally.
Because because we should also say invention perks like honed and whatnot do help.
And we have a question about the next thing later in the podcast, so we'll discuss more of it later. But having bladed dive unlocked is very helpful for this. Very helpful.
But you can do effectively it without it. It's just a little bit more difficult.
Yes, it requires some additional setup, but it is nice to have. Next up, the Crystal Mask. They have updated Crystal Mask without telling anybody about it. We noticed this later in the week. The Crystal Mask acts like the resonance ability at a normal boss, in that it immunes you from the next hit the boss does towards you. Which is great, because, you know, if there's a challenging mechanic or a mechanic that does a ton of damage, which, hint, there is, Crystal Mask is a great way to avoid that. And lastly, the Perfect Plus Potion does give benefits to several of the skills in this encounter. Which is to say, your Perfect Juju Potions will also work for that.
Yeah, I would say, in short, you know, you're used to optimizing XP when you're skilling, right?
Do the same thing here.
Yes, but in a different way. Like, you know, you're not going to be using your clan avatar and stuff like that. But yeah. you want to use those, or if you notice, like the auras, like the Call of the Sea, Lumberjack, Quarrymaster, most of them are all like an increase in your gathering, so right. that can make a pretty significant impact.
All right.
Instead of optimizing for XP rates, you're optimizing for kill times, which is optimizing for GP.
So how do we win?
So let's talk through this. Right. Before we get there, quick reminder, set up for this, it is helpful to have keybinds for Surge, Blade of Dive, Anticipate, your Restores, and your Crystal Mask, because having keybinds for these prevents them from interrupting your actions when you perform them. So let's talk about the actual fight. Goals for the fight. The fight arena is set up. There are four corners of the arena. Each corner has a giant monster killed by one of four ancient warriors. The corpse is kept in the graveyard in that corner. Closer towards the center from the corpse is a statue that needs to be repaired of those ancient warriors, which will allow you to access the very center of the arena, which is the core of the boss, which is where you need to skill of some variety that changes every kill to kill, you know, kill the boss, get your kill, restore it to its slumber. So those four corners respond to each one of the skills, and the only you have to kind of be careful about how you get between them. You gather resources from each corner, and you use those resources to repair the statues that are closer in, but not the statue in the same corner. So you need to traverse around the arena in order to do this. Once the statues are repaired, you then pray at them to open up the core. Each statue adds a set amount of time. I want to say it's about 20 seconds, but I haven't actually timed it, where the core is open for you to do damage to the boss through whatever skilling. The central node changes to one of the four skills randomly. So if you have augmented tools, it's useful to bring those augmented tools to have that extra augment the perk buff from
them. And this is where the synergizing with the core team comes in. When it comes to attacking the core, on our first runs, we were doing very low damage to it. And I assume that was because we didn't do something right in terms of
yes.
activating statues or something?
So the core, the way the core works, when you gather from the outside corpses on this boss, there's a little health bar above that is color-coded for that skill. So it's red for wood cutting, yellow for mining, green for fishing, and light blue for hunter. And the HP bar starts halfway through the middle. When the HP bar reaches full, so when you gather from it, that HP bar, I guess that progress bar, increases. And if you're not gathering from it, that progress bar will go down. When that bar reaches full, the corpse will decay, and all of the skilling nodes located on the corpse will deactivate. There are still skilling nodes located in the area that you can use, but the corpse has one node that is sparkly that will give you increased produce. When you fully deplete for every one of those corpses that is fully depleted, you do additional damage to the center core. So the goal is that when your group is attacking that center core, you want to have all four of those corpses in the depleted state.
Got it.
They do regenerate slowly over time. And you can use, during the fight, if you get hit by mechanics, some of the fungus you've gathered will rot. And you can also left-click fungus you've gathered to rot it yourself, using clicking on a depleted node on a depleted corpse will rot that corpse, so it takes twice as long to regenerate. So if you're in a smaller team, or you're taking longer for your kills, rotting those corpses will give you additional time to like get everything else set up and start damaging
and
that
based
core.
On that, if you don't have those bars filled in, that's what's going to influence your damage in the middle, right?
Correct. Okay. Yes, that's a big... That and your level are the two biggest contributing factors to your damage to the boss.
Got it.
All which right. brings us to the next thing, which is contribution. So, as you're doing these things, the gathering, the rotting of the corpses, the repairing and praying at the statues, and damaging the core, as well as one other mechanic that we will discuss momentarily, you gain a contribution score for each of those things that you do. And every time you get hit or two other things that are negative for the kill... I believe, as far as we've been able to test, you lose some contribution yeah. score down to a minimum of zero, of course. And the number of drops you get from the boss, the number of like loot piles, is directly related to the amount of contribution score you have. So a single person kill, right, when people have been cheesing it this week with some stuff, could have like 800 total contribution. A four-man kill typically has somewhere in the neighborhood of about 2,000 total contribution, so that four-man kill will get many more drops than a single person. And so that's something to consider as well, is that if you have more people, it's not like there's a set amount of contribution. It's just if everybody is contributing for the length of the fight, you all get a decent score. Obviously more so if there's more to do if you have smaller people. So there's a sweet spot in there. But with that said, so contribution is a big deal, and we try to kind of keep that relatively even in teams. But the more you do for the boss, the more rewards you get, and the more chances you get to roll onto that rare table. So that's the like core for how the boss works. And then, you know, obviously there's some specific details, like the material gathered from one resource must be delivered to the next two statues counterclockwise. And you need 15 of each. And so I think that more or less covers what needs to be done for that.
Yep.
Again, with quick reminders that if you have that, you're crafting construction offhand or the offhand hammer, you do faster restoration on the statues when you're getting ready to get those restored. Moving on a little bit more towards the mechanics, right? So that's our goals for the fight. The next question is, what can the fight do to cause us to lose? So
because
I mentioned that...
That's so important, because so far, what we're describing sounds like a minigame, and there's no failure state that we've talked about yet, but right. The number one thing that makes bossing profitable is that you can fail at it. And we know, Tanis, you failed this week. I'm sorry, I just had to put that out there.
Damn.
There's been some failure, you know, but that's okay.
Shane, we've had a few fails too.
We have. You got it. We have.
And all of my fails were in public instance. So I'm not saying.
Yeah, of course.
I'm just saying.
And we had a lot of failures on the first day as well. But anyways, how do we lose?
No, I mean, I think that's an interesting discussion point. Just to point out very briefly that this is something very similar to Barbarian Assault, where a single person
yep.
not understanding what's going on can very much cost you the kill, which is the problem and the challenge with public instances. And hopefully, when we get a couple weeks into this and everybody's watched a guide and has gotten successful kills, those public instances will become much more successful. I really hope people don't give up on this just because they did public instances first week and were like, oh my gosh, this never works. It will. People will get there. It will be just like Barbarian Assault, where there will be a meta that gets figured out for it, and then people will follow that, and kills will be smooth and quick in those public instances. So I'm a little worried about the backlash from that from
yeah.
people, but I think people will get their brains around it, people that really care about this. It feels very much like a minigame to me. As a person who loves minigames, I'm so on board with it. But yes, let's talk about those loss conditions. There's two main ways that you lose this fight. One of them is related to the boss mechanics, which we're going to talk about right after. So let's start with the other one, which is that I've already mentioned that when you restore those statues, they give you a window of time to activate that core. You can only activate each of those statues once. You can't re-restore them again afterwards. So that minute and a half or 2 minutes that you have to access that core, if your team does not do enough damage in that time, if they aren't on that middle core and doing damage to it when it's available, you absolutely will lose the kill. And this is the biggest thing I've seen in public instances this week, is that players are restoring one statue and activating it. And then, because they can now go through the middle, they're rushing to complete all the other three statues, and that first statue's worth of time effectively gets wasted. Which results in losing the kill, because you then do not finish damaging the core before the time allotted from the four statues depletes. The other loss condition is a mechanic that has been referred to as rot, and I believe that's from the developers, but There's a yellow bar. It's underneath the health bar of the boss, and it counts from 0% to 100%. That rot percentage is gained every time players have their stats drained by a boss mechanic. They get a rot percent gets increased very slowly by having open corpses, so corpses that have not been fully depleted, and by a mechanic called the energy fungus, which is the last thing I mentioned earlier. This thing gives an absolute ton of contribution. It happens every 2 minutes and 24 seconds on the dot, and it can give you, I mean, in 8-man teams, it's a quarter of your contribution point, so it's worth waiting to make sure that everybody gets onto this energy fungus at 2 minutes and 24 seconds before you pray at those statues. But if you don't pray, if you don't deal with this energy fungus, it also donates 40% rot to the boss every time it fully depletes. So there's a timed window for it, and you have to do enough damage to it, gather from it, to remove it. Otherwise, it's... In the smaller teams, it's a free loss.
Yeah,
is effectively what it is. It's very difficult to finish the boss fight if one of these energy funguses gets off. And as I mentioned earlier, if you're not looking at the boss, because he's appear right next to the core of the boss, right outside of the closed area for it, it's easy to miss these. There is a verbal cue for it. There's a voice line, but if people play without their voice, without their volume on, we've had a couple 4-man kills where we've missed this because we just weren't looking for it. Early in the week when we didn't know that it was timed as well as it is. So there's that. So those are your rot percent things. So let's talk about the ways that, you can get your stats drained by this boss. The arena, I mentioned there's four corners to the arena and you need to traverse between them. On the east and west sides, there are these mushroom fields, and anytime you start an instance, all of the traversing points between these are stable for the full hour. So if you know what the path is to things, you're the same path the whole hour. For these mushroom fields on the east and west, there's a singular, one-square-wide path that winds through this mushroom field that you have to click to walk across the field. Any step you take outside of that path will do 9 or 10 reduction or drain to each of your core 4 gathering skills. And if you get your core gathering skills drained past, I want to say it's more than about 40 or 50 total,
yeah,
each,
about
half,
right.
You do get kicked out of the arena. So that's where having those restore flasks is really important, because anytime you get hit by something, you get that drain. It'll slow your gathering down, it'll decrease your damage to the core, and it'll get you closer to getting kicked out. So getting the stats restored is important.
Some of these mechanics, it's only a couple hits, and you're down
right
there.
So, yeah. I'm going to say it's about 50. About 50 total on each of the skills. Close to 150 to 200 total drain before you get kicked out. But if you're running across these mushroom fields, you get hit 40 times by each of them. You're 4 or 5 steps, and you're just out. So that's the east and west sides. If you have the surge and bladed dive ability, this is where this comes up. If you have both of those keybound, you hit the keybound for bladed dive, and then you click, you're standing at the base of the stairs on one side of this field, you click the stairs on the far side with your bladed dive active, so you activate your bladed dive and then hit your surge keybind in that same instant, you will instantly travel the full length of the mushroom field exactly. It is like timed out, so if you're at the very edge of one field, you get to the far very edge. That's the easiest way to get through. You can also line up so that one surge will put you at the correct point in the path halfway across, and then another surge will get you across with double surge. You do just have to get that kind of lined up correctly.
Yeah, so you don't need bladed dive, but it definitely helps.
No,
to,
I agree with
helps
that.
To have it.
For the north and south sides, there is an obstacle course of sorts. There's 4 lines drawn between those 2 corners, 4 lines of mushrooms and debris. You need to cross each of these 4 lines. And the only way to cross them is by crossing over mushrooms. There's 4 available mushroom crossing points. One of those mushroom crossing points will be lit up with golden particles, which, as Tannis has already mentioned, they're the same as the ones outside, so they're pretty hard to see. If you have kind of any visual issues. So it's another accessibility potential problem. But It's those four paths, four mushrooms that you pick, and you can look at this before the fight starts. They don't change once you start the instance, and it's the same for the full hour. So if you're only crossing the north-south borders, you can actually just memorize the correct path and then just always follow it. And you can do that outside of the fight time, which makes this, I hope, a little bit more accessible and somewhat mitigates those issues, although, again, it's a band-aid fix, not
right.
really an
and,
actual
and you shouldn't need
thought
to be
solution.
Asked in order to do that. It should be something that you should be able to pick up. And you know, we're going to talk about this, because I feel like this has been a recurring issue with all the three fronts after we talk about the mechanics here.
But it's a workaround, is what I'll say for that. So that's kind of traversing the arena. That's the arena and the fight and your mechanics. Let's talk about the actual boss's attacks. The boss has a consistent attack pattern. It is the exact same every time, every kill. And that is that one attack will come out every 12 seconds. There is a 7 mechanic rotation. One of the mechanics gets repeated halfway through. Those 7 mechanics, and the one that is repeated, the first one is smoke. So at 12 seconds, the boss will begin the animation to throw a colored smoke at each player. It's the same color for all players, and it drains the color associated with that smoke. Remember, it's red for woodcutting, yellow for mining, green for fishing, and blue for hunter. You'll get about 11 or 12 drains, so it's a relatively small drain. But it prevents you from standing at whatever skilling node you're standing at when this activates. If you walk away at exactly 12 seconds, and you walk back at exactly 15 seconds, the smoke will land behind you wherever you walk to. So it's something you can avoid. The next mechanic, at 24 seconds, a fairy ring will spawn under half of the players in the arena and will teleport you to a random corner of the arena after a couple of seconds.
There's that
very
mushroom
easy,
jumping
you can just
I told
walk
you
out
about, Tannis.
Mm-hmm.
Something, if you're in a public instance with a ton of people, you can actually use this to get a leg up by getting 10 resources before they spawn and then teleporting to the next corner to drop them off before other people can get there. Tricky twicky.
But it could just teleport you as well to a different point in your same corner.
It could teleport you to your same corner and then just rot one of your fungus, and then you're like, well, gosh darn it. That happens a lot to me. Grumble. Third mechanic is blobs. These are the biggest problem. These things drain. And we should also mention, your stat drains are lowered by 25% if you have the upgraded Pontifex Signet Ring. So all of these things, the numbers that I'm putting out are generally actually with the upgraded ring. So this is the numbers I've been seeing for the last few days. So third mechanic is these blobs. They do 36 damage to each of your skills. It's a huge drain. If you don't have the ring, it's more than one dose of restore. It's 27 damage only with the rings, which is obviously better, but still massive. There's a little bit of rubber banding that happens in the instances for this.
Yeah.
So I always crystal mask this. As soon as I see that fairy ring spawn underneath me and get out of the way, I crystal mask immediately so that it's ready for when this blob spawns, and I never move for it. I just let it hit me.
And to be fair, I think to manage your inventory appropriately, to use crystal mask, I think you need a rune pouch for that, don't you?
You can do it with a single large regular rune pouch. Having a grasping rune pouch means that you can use fire and earth runes instead of lava runes, which is nice.
All right, fair enough.
But you also don't believe there's any other good option for your ammo slot, so that actually, say, you know, it's not an extra inventory space to keep that with you, hopefully. But of course, you do have to buy a rune pouch, so that's something else we should consider. After the blobs come out, 48 seconds now, the next mechanic is smoke.
Same smoke again, we talked about previously.
So this is the same thing we talked about previously. You walk away at 48 seconds, you walk back at 51, it lands wherever you were in the interim. Great. After smoke, the boss will throw out, very similar to the smoke bombs actually, a stun bomb. If you move for this, you won't get hit. If you don't move, you can either anticipate or freedom, and it will unstun you. If you remain stunned for the duration, it's about 4 seconds, you will get a drain of about 20 or so, about 17, 16 with the ring. Eminently avoidable, relatively easy. The biggest use for this is to know the mechanic that's coming next, which is the 7th of these mechanics, the 6th different one. Our last mechanic, which is sticky fungus, which occurs underneath your feet. And the first time the sticky fungus occurs, all the times it occurs, it'll occur to half the people in the arena, you need to have those protein logs in you. You just click the ground under your feet. The click box for it is a little bit wonky sometimes. I'll be totally honest. I wish it was just the full square underneath me.
Yep.
It's unfortunately just where the fungus shows up, which is about half the square, but you kind of have to click around. After a short animation, you'll free yourself for lighting that thing. It's an instant animation if you're wielding the Orthon Furnace Core or Santa's Fire Torch. That was rotation, then completely repeats one more time at the exact same way. Although the second time that sticky fungus happens underneath half the players is when those energy fungus spawn in the middle. So the second time this goes is the 2 minute and 24 second mark. So half the people will get frozen in place and will need to free themselves prior to running in for that energy fungus in the middle. All those good participation contribution points. That covers the boss mechanics from the attacks it does for you. After you free the sticky fungus, it will then repeat the mechanics again. The sticky fungus does not take precisely 12 seconds to remove, so they no longer happen on those exact 12-second marks. So for the first 12 seconds, you know precisely mechanically what the boss is going to do. After that, you would need to time it out and time between mechanics.
And if you have somebody on voice who knows what's going on, that might be called out, as has happened in some of our runs in the past.
Hello, my name is Taxi.
And this would be the same order of mechanics every time that goes around.
The same minute and 12-second rotation. That same for things that's repeated twice. The second round gets energy fungus every time for the entire fight. Every 12 seconds. Boss also has animations to show when it's going to throw things and do things. But as I mentioned previously, I cannot personally monitor my own character as skilling and performing actions, dodging things, and look at the boss.
Yeah.
So I go off the time personally. I wish the sight lines were a little better. They put buildings in the corners of the arena, which unfortunately blocked that view. Which kind of brings us to the next thing, which is... And before we jump into this, I should mention, too, we talked about the core. It's not that big of a deal, frankly, in terms of damage and killing the boss. But the core has particles that spawn on it. Once you've been skilling on it, you can continue to skill no matter what. But every once in a while, you will get red, yellow, or green, colorblindness, grumble, particles that appear on this core. If you click the green ones, it'll do 1,000 extra damage to the boss. If the yellow ones will do 500. They're marked as poison hit splats, which is lets you know that people are using these. And if you click when it's red, it will heal the boss by 2,500. It is entirely reasonable, and those damage numbers are relatively small, all things considered. They're enough to bump you over the edge if you're close to getting a kill, but they are almost never mandatory. Almost always finish with 20 or 30 extra seconds anyways. They're just a little extra contribution, but the overall impact is very small.
And Gorvek gets mad at you.
Yes, and Gorvek will call out anybody in public for everybody to see.
Oh, I just noticed in one of our kills, someone said, snap, RSBNB is here. Everyone be cool.
Oh, yay!
Just noticed that. Chunk the Monk getting a free call out here on update. Anyways.
But yes, yeah, so sorry for all of our colorblindness folks out there. That's unfortunate.
Well, let's talk
those
about
were the colors they decided
the
on.
Accessibility,
but let's talk about that.
Of it, because...
Yeah.
Tanis, I took you to a public instance, and we'll talk about the public instances right after this. I'll get the exact words out of your mouth. How did it go for you? Because this is the first front you've been able to experience on launch week.
Yeah, you know, I was really, really, really excited. Couldn't wait. Got off work and immediately I think you texted me like, hey, you want to try to get a kill? Like, you know, sure, let's do this. And later that night we went down, and I had been down a little bit before just to check out the area. Like I said, it was gorgeous. When we went into the instance, I immediately started looking around and could tell there was going to be a lot of visual clutter. And it was big, so field of view was probably going to come into play.
Another thing that even I noticed is that they're doing things in this day and age where it's not easy to tell unless you mouse over things what is immediately interactable. I don't know if you were there, Thaxi, but I actually had to ask someone for help in finding the deposit box because I couldn't see it because I didn't know it was interactable.
It just looks like rubble.
Yeah.
I didn't know where they were either. It took me a couple of kills. Thankfully, I didn't need them at the time.
Yeah.
My first day was 8-man.
I mean, going into it, I was prepared to, like, I knew enough to know to go to, you know, one of the corners. You needed two people per quadrant or whatever. I knew enough to go counterclockwise. So I had a basic understanding of how it worked. But every one of the mechanics you said, I got smashed by, could not get out of the way, just couldn't get out of the way. That was the main issue. The collars with the core and clicking on that, there's just no excuse. They know better than that.
How is the smoke? Because the smoke is yellow, green, red, or blue, I believe.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yeah, the smoke attacks.
I didn't even know it had different colors. I couldn't tell that.
I mean, it drains A skill. You just look at what skill's drained. If that's the one you're using, you restore. But, yeah.
How hard is it, a question for you, Tanis, to have an eye on your buff bar? Because it does show in your buff bar when skills are drained.
Oh, it just depends. If I want to slam it closer to my character, then that's fine. But how much, you know, you can only get things so close and still be able to interact with stuff around you.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
So they are set to click through, but yeah.
Yeah. It was just, I was a little bummed out. I mean, like I said, it's the tale of two bosses for me, because on an accessibility level, I hate to say it, but it's probably one of the most inaccessible bosses there is. Not only just because of the pure mechanics of the boss and how those are hard to navigate, but also in the fact that you need the teams, and the teams are unforgiving, and especially when you're dealing with this kind of stuff, someone that might have a little bit thinner skin would probably really get upset.
Well, can I tip this on its head? How does this feel accessibility wise if you are comparing it to mini games? Because this feels to me is this feels like Barbarian Assault almost with a drop table.
Yeah,
I haven't interacted a lot with Barbarian Assault, but I've heard a lot of the same things, which is why I've never took it on, because I don't know. I mean, I have to learn with a team, essentially. There's really no other way. And I just think it's a bummer because skilling is it's great if you can skill together, but how many skills do you skill together? I mean, most of the time, everybody is skilling. They might be doing different skills and you're hanging out on voice and just, you know, shooting shit. I don't know.
It's a question of... Go for it, Dennis.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I feel they're too punishing. I feel that they were trying to mimic a normal boss encounter so much that it puts so much emphasis on movement that that's not how you skill.
I'm going to devil's advocate here for this one.
I wonder if you're going to make the same point I was just thinking. Go for it.
Which, there's a couple of things to say. I think that this opens up content for a new group of people. So I think this is that they're hardcore skillers who want to have the group experience. I think this is something that gives that to them versus like Big Game Hunter, which I would say is an equivalent kind of PVM skilling, but only solo. And if there was no other skilling content that was PVM-like, I would say this maybe less so. I think this is one of those, you get variety of content for variety of players. I think this is something that will appeal to those people, but once again, this says nothing for the accessibility of it. This is just, it's a variety of content. And that would be the argument that I would make for it, to kind of counteract the, like, skillers don't do people, which, fair enough, in all honesty, fair enough.
Well, I mean, it's not that, you know, there are skills, you know, dungeoneering is a team skill, but a lot of people would call that a mini game, right? It's just that the core, or at least the way that I see skilling a lot of times, is you are maximizing for XP. You're trying to gather as much as you can. You're doing like you're pushing to the limit, but that limit rarely has to do with you blading, diving around the room and surging and that's not how skilling works. Yeah. Like teamwork. Yeah. Yes. Teamwork is involved in some skills, but it's a whole different, I mean, even when you think about like dungeoneering, it's a whole different way that team interacts the way that it's calling out. So I hate to say it, but I almost feel like Big Game Hunter is more of a skilling boss in the way that like old school has skilling bosses. I really feel like this. I mean, love the fact that it exists.
Diving around an arena.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, that's true.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Old school, you can solo the things. It takes 40 minutes, but it's something that there's not necessarily a punishment for it. It's just your ability to last that long. Kill you before then, unless you are cheesing it with bug.
Well, and that's the thing that I just feel like it is very punishing, because they wanted to mimic that peril or whatever,
right?
You know, and I understand that. It's just that literally with a few hits, I'm out, and there's no margin for error. It's hard to learn if you don't have a team. Like I said, there's so much visual clutter. Shane, when you just said about running through the mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
I didn't even know I was getting hit that hard.
Yeah,
every time.
And see, that's the thing, is that if you remove all these accessibility problems, I honestly think you would have a different opinion of this.
I probably will. That's why I said, that's why I am of two minds. I'm so happy it exists. And I do think it fits a RS3 vision.
Yeah.
I wish that vision was a little less punishing and maybe a little fewer people.
You know, I'm going to say this. This is in my top five potential contenders for update of the year so far.
Well, it was, I mean, it's really enjoyable. The ecosystem that it brought to the game,
that's it.
Money for the skillers.
It's the star of the show. I mean, it really is. Do we want to talk about that? Because
we should.
I mean, it's great money for skillers.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Especially if you're getting rares, which
we can speak to. We do that, I just want to make a comment about this in terms of needing a group. Four-man is going to get you the most money when you do it efficiently with people, you know. Eight-man works as well. But the public instances also work well. You and I were there for about 3 to 4 hours on the Tuesday, weren't we?
And I'm a big fan of six-man as well, for the record. Okay. I think six-man may be the optimal way to do the boss.
All right, fair enough.
But yes, public instances.
This we made it work on... We had one going on 66, our home world. We then swapped to 98, which was the Elder God Wars dungeon world. And apparently,
I should say that I pulled people to 66 from 98 because of a bug, which has now been patched.
Okay.
So I have done a lot of work this week and a lot of typing in public chat to coach and counsel people to get those public instances running. It very much sounds like they normally are still having trouble. When we were doing it, we were getting great successful kills, but I was also... I don't want to say micromanaging our teammates, but I was being a little bit aggressive. not to individuals, but just in terms of how things maybe should be done in a way that will not lose us kills.
Right.
Which I hope was polite and respectful, you know.
Yeah, in terms of, teaching people not to pray until all the statues are ready.
I've done a lot of coaching and teaching this week.
Yeah.
And I believe that worked for public instance, and it sounds like the next day, yesterday, that was no longer running as smoothly.
Okay.
I think eventually the people that are not getting kills will leave, and the people that are getting kills will all stay, and the public instances, I think they will eventually be efficient. They are not currently.
All right. So perhaps then we had a bit of a colored perspective on that. And this raises,
if you're willing
to
put in the work, it works.
Yeah, and this raises a concern for me, because this is a group skilling boss that they recommend 8, which is minimum 4. And for anybody who doesn't want a group and doesn't want to find people to play with, it's going to be a tall order, assuming these public instances are going to work. What you What you almost need is you just need like a group instance world where you say join public instance, and it will pull together everybody from all the worlds that are looking and just apportion them properly in certain areas, kind of like the Clan Citadel does.
And I don't know if you've seen, they did update the world list this week. World 98 is the North American Elder God Wars world, and there's an European world as well. And I'm hoping that people just notice that, and those will be the de facto worlds when you want to do this. So hopefully that will act in a similar way. I will also say that I am incredibly confident that with two people that have a good set of skilling gear, the full set of skilling outfits and auras and familiars, you could very, very easily get very consistent 2-man kills at this boss, with relatively little issue.
Makes sense.
Times that are actually not that different from 4-man, but you wouldn't get incredibly much more loot than 4-man in terms of contribution. But I think if you even just had one friend, I think you could who was confident in the boss, I think you could pull this off no problem.
Yeah.
And that's a very legitimate way to do it, instead of, you know, we say minimum 4-man, but I think 2-man is very reasonable.
And my big concern about this is that they release this as RS3's first skilling boss. The concern is that it pushes people away. And in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, public instances are just chaos. And you can only kill this if you know people. That's my worst case scenario for this.
My hope is that people will understand it and everybody will watch guides. People doing public instances will be doing it because they're earning money from doing those public instances. And they want to keep... Because it's also great for... Quick reminder, the reason that a lot of the skilling bosses do so well in old school is because their Iron Man community is huge. Our Iron Command community gets a ton out of this, and we'll talk about the common drops in a second, but this is a pretty fantastic boss for Iron Man, especially Iron Man who want to do PVM.
And anyone going for Herblore as well.
Any skill, lot of the skilling stuff,
What's your take, though? Do you think public instances will survive in the weeks to come?
I think they will. I think, I mean, they changed it so that the max is 18. I think they're... My hope and anticipation is that if nothing else, the public instances for the EU world at EU times and the NA world at NA times will have plenty. And it may be that only one of those is active, right? Like, it may just be that World 98, just the NA world, is the world, right? That's what happened for Castle Wars, is that World 26 became the world. It may happen the same thing for Krosis. But I have a feeling that there will always be Iron Man who want supplies from this. I have a feeling, or who want the drops. I have a feeling there will almost always be, you know, skillers who want to just earn some extra money or get some chance at the big armor drops.
Yeah.
Because I think the armor will, and the book will retain some value, if nothing else, and the offhands. So I think that there will still be some people that do it, and the people that consistently do it will be good, and the public instances, I'm optimistic that they'll... Like, in a week from now, or even when the next front releases, anybody who's still doing this will be top-notch at it. Those public instance kills will be clean and easy.
All right. Well, that's something we'll have to come back and check on, because that has been a concern I've heard from a good number of people on this. So.
I think people are moving on too quickly. I think they're giving up too quickly, and the people that aren't dedicated to doing the boss, they just wanted a nice PVM encounter, will not come back, and that is fine. This is not content for them.
So, common drops. Tier 3, Elder Troves of Bic. That's a thing. I wasn't anticipating there to be Tier 3 Elder Troves, but hey, it's a thing. We also have a ton of herb lore supplies.
So it drops three different herbs, and it drops... I'm trying to see if I still have the wiki page up. I do. It drops three herbs, and it drops secondaries for summoning potions and prayer potions and... what are the five...
Super restores.
Super restores. Great. So...
That's the red spider eggs.
Right.
Super restores. The fungi is energy, and fungus is what the other one is.
And for player owned ports things. That's what those are in there for. That's right. Or player owned farm. Wow. But yes, prayer potions, restores, and summoning potions. Which the summoning potions, the restores, all that stuff we had, all the herbs for those dropped from. So between the Glacier and this, we also have all the ingredients for brews and some of the most common ingredients, the two herbs that are used for twice in overloads. There's a handful of herbs used in overloads, but there's only two herbs that are used twice, and that's Quorum and Dwarfweed, which are dropped from this. So this drops combat-related skilling supplies. So this is for the Iron Man that wants to do PVM. Yeah. This is for, you know, for decreasing the price of training herb lore effectively.
The adrenaline crystals are also there as well.
Adrenaline crystals, right.
That's what I think is interesting, though, because I don't know if it actually lowers the price of the training as much as it lowers the price of these essential things that you use.
Bingo. And you know what the theory? The theory we came up with on this was that the whole point behind these Elder God Wars fronts is to lower the price of PVM supplies.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with something similar to a death rework, and there's your death problem fixed. Because the thing people complain about death is it's too expensive. And you can approach that in two ways. You can lower the cost of the things that you die with, or you can tweak the death formula itself. They're doing the first one right now, and they have a brief in design for the second one. So I'd imagine we'll see something like that sometime in the new year, if I had to guess. And that's how you fix this.
And plus, they're filling the economy nicely by saying there's a large demand for these. Let's add in some supply.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that they're doing that. I think that skilling-wise, it's appropriate.
And the concern about this, though, is that this effectively kills herb farming, I think, almost. At least right now.
Oh,
these are very challenging.
I mean, but like I said,
herb runs are less profitable, but still there.
And the herbs that it dropped, I mean, you're still going to, like, think about what are the herb lore training methods. A lot of times you do the power burst now.
Yeah,
right?
You do bruise to 96, then overloads, and then...
Well, bruise are great money right now.
And I never did bruise.
Right, because they were too expensive back then. And then past 100, then you can start portioning it out to power bursts and what you need to make elder overloads and the salves with that.
Right. But I mean, even to get there, though, you still need your basic herbs for your extremes, right? To even get to... See, so I don't think it's going to kill herb farming any more than the farm killed tree farming. I mean, people still do their runs, right?
Totally.
But just a note about the Bic Trove, those drop super attacks, super restores, extreme ranging, and extreme magic potions.
Yeah, which is they've been doing that since for tier two and tier troves as well. The tier twos also drop those. I don't know if they changed the rate to make them a little more common in these, but that has been a thing. But that's a little extra, right, on top of other things.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but yeah, the boss in total, we do drop, so it's effectively three potions worth of herbs, three potions worth of secondaries, all combat related, plus the other things that you would expect if you were using skills to skill, which is like your stone spirits. It's a boss. Your crafting gem is rocktails, magic logs. Raw rocktails, magic logs. Some farming seeds and the mushrooms for making it cheaper to raise zygomites.
Right, I forgot to mention that you can't feed that fungus to the zygomites as well.
which I think was their intent with that. So that makes Zygomites more reasonable to grow and use as a training method, which is really nice. And then, of course, it also drops the God Wars Dungeon 3 drops of Hydrix Bolt Chips and Soul Runes, as well as some PVM and just general money supplies of salvage and crystal keys, coins, adrenaline crystals.
Yeah, all the gems, of course, except Sapphire as well.
Yep. So that, crafting gems. So good general group of, like, the crafting supplies that you get from PVM are all present here. The, your usual mix of money and things. I mean, the drop table feels like a boss drop table, but it does include a lot of the things we've talked about in the past in terms of skilling supplies and how maybe skilling supplies don't belong on a PVM drop table, specifically kind of logs and raw fish and kind of those stone spirits.
Yeah, and I feel like you can make the argument this time that it's okay because you're skilling to get that. So if it's a skilling,
I was going to make the argument that a skilling boss, it's appropriate to drop skilling supplies because you are skilling to do the boss.
Absolutely, I agree. So, I agree totally.
Yeah, and I would, and honestly, I'm going to break everyone's heart here, but the magic armor might have been more appropriate to go with the glacier than this boss. I know that takes away the big awe moment, but if we're looking at it from this perspective,
yeah. And then I mean, you could have just buffed the other drops instead to do that, but then I think there would have been a question involved about this. Okay, you call it a boss. Why don't we have the same number of WoW drops?
Well, you just would have had to you would have had to have more offhands that affected more skills, right? Instead of doing the armor, you would have to have more offhands.
Which is interesting that they didn't add a weapon for the Ancient Warriors of Falmi or, oh my gosh, the fourth one. They didn't add anything for Hunter or Fisher.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say this here. This would have been a perfect time to drop the tier 90 hatchet requirement.
I agree.
Yeah.
And we should say this as well, just going back to the boss for a minute, that if you're doing woodcutting, you're going to be the slowest of the bunch because you're only working with a tier 70 tool.
Unless you have the fire torch, which gives you plus 20 produce.
Well, there you
in which
go.
Case you are on board and on pace with the others. And fishing is by far the slowest of the four skills, even without offhands.
Yeah, there's also something that was determined that since it's net fishing, that the rod doesn't work.
The rod does not increase your catch chance. The rod still allows you to use perk, so your honed six perk will still apply and give you good benefit. I take issue with people saying don't bring your rod.
Okay, fair enough.
And if you are doing the fishing, it's a must to have that call of the sea active.
You must have the aura, and the rock lobster and all that stuff, because it is unquestionably the slowest of those four skills in terms of gathering. It is the waiting point in every kill. In not every kill, but many kills.
All right.
Obviously, RNG plays because skilling.
That was a bit of meandering back to the boss. But overall, I think we're happy with this, and Tanis would take it a step further from what it sounds like.
And I do want to mention, too, that like part of this is the issue and the reason you have to have those rare drops is that the rare drops are a vast majority of the money for this, right?
Yeah.
If you get a rare drop, that's half the profit you're going to get for 100 kills, which is, again, worth stating. The rares from this boss are incredibly rare, so there's actually been a lot of complaining, especially among the PVM community, that like the first couple drops you get from this is going to be the pet, on average, because the rares from this are so, so rare.
So you're saying I did a good thing with getting that leg bottom piece then?
Right, so Shane got some legs this week us, and a four-man.
Of course he did.
You bet your buttons. And we repaired those and sold them for pretty good money, and that was about half the money I made from the boss this week. And I got my 100th kill count last night. I've not been back since. So in 100 kill count, I received a spore sack. Another of our clanmates did 100 kill count. I think the only other person to hit 100 kill count this week, as far as I'm aware, and got not a single drop, nothing on the log. And almost all of their kills were four-man. I did about a third or almost a little under half of mine in a public instance. They did almost entirely four- and six-man kills and got no drops. So the rares for this are incredibly rare, but if you do get them, they should hold their value. because of that, which makes it, again, you come to this as a skilling boss. If you were to remove those, you then need to, like, triple. Yeah. Every one of those you need to remove, you need to, like, triple the amount of commons, which then crashes, you know, the ever-living daylights out of the markets for those items. Or you make a very broad drop table, which then devalues more things. So I think the rares are important in terms of making this a profitable boss while also doing other things. And I do agree with you that it would be nice to have the magic armor elsewhere. But I do understand why they felt the need to put it here, kind of matching that crafting scheme for, you know, really matches like Ganodermic. It's cool.
Yeah.
It does.
But anyway, so that's my thought on like the rares part of this, is that that may be appropriate, and I do appreciate that they're there. I would like them to be a little less rare, because anybody going for the title for this, the Infected, which is super neat, they have a long road ahead of them.
Oh, we also,
especially if they have to do public instances.
Also, the pet is indeed named Little Sus.
Yes, good job, well done.
There you go. That was a last minute edit by Jagex before they released it.
Yeah, they saw Shane call it like, "Oh."
No, I actually figured it out that I looked into the name of the file of the pet, and it was actually called Little Sus. So that's how I knew that last week. But
okay. Shaky.
Let's see.
Well,
the only other thing I have listed in the notes is that Derp from Clan Quest has a good Krosis 4-man guide that he put up on the wiki, so you can give that a read if you're interested in seeing the strategy that we've been using around from that.
I have a couple edits I may make to his suggestions, simply in terms of like mechanics for activating plated dive could be written a little more clearly.
And see,
there's some other things that are not totally in there, but overall, it's a good overview for people that are familiar with the boss mechanics.
Yeah, and this is, you know, one of the wonderful things that Clan Quest does is we have this wiki that anybody can contribute to, and Thaxi as a member, if you want to add into this guide, you go straight for it, and anybody can do this. All you have to do is join Clan Quest, join our clan chat, and if you like what you see, fill out an app at clanquest.org/join-rs3. That'll take you to the RuneScape official forums, and one of us shining people will accept your application if you do indeed choose to join us, and we love our members.
You do not need to join in game to join the clan either. You can
have full access to the wiki
and everything, and stay in your original clan and be a full member and have privileges in the clan, and just not have a rank in the actual clan chat. And that is absolutely welcome.
Yeah, and honestly, I think Clan Quest is one of the best run clans that I've ever seen. Though I might be kind of biased.
You might be biased,
as I have a pretty big hand in that. So
I feel like you're about a step away from starting to knock on random doors saying, "Hello, would you like to join Clan Quest?"
Hello, my name is Elder Shane.
Yeah,
I would like
to hear the good news about Clan Quest.
Oh, I gotta suggest that to Draz, Clan Quest missionary service.
Oh, no.
Anyways, so we're gonna move on. We have a question about this, but before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters this week for this podcast, this week in particular. I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Brock H, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jesse W, Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Renhawk, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Stubbev, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly means the world to us, and if you want to learn what supporting the podcast is all about, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb, and there, for as little as $1 a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, which are special monthly bonus shows. You guys voted, and the next one will be a theory crafting segment of lore about how the Elder God Wars ends. We aim to have this one out to you next week, or perhaps the week after. We do want to take a bit of time with this one to ensure that we're not throwing out some crackpot theory that's going to be disproven. We want to see if we can actually get
the
this
eggs are
right.
Hatching, Shane. The eggs are hatching.
Because nobody has apparently yet figured out which way they're going with this. So maybe we can be the ones to do that. And if you want to listen to that, check us out at patreon.com /RSBNB. We also do have the VIP tier for $3 a month, where you'll get a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high quality stereo versions of the show. And we do have our insider tier. We get a shout out on the podcast each and every week and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show in addition to everything else. And these last two that I mentioned do include a rank on Discord. And we do all sorts of fun things with the community. We're currently working towards a Patreon mail out. Should we hit $200 a month? And should we hit $500 in some absurd universe, some mirror universe of RSBNB? Tannis and
Aaron
I will
universe.
Subject ourselves to the Hot Ones Challenge. And you probably do need the mirror universe for that, right?
Shane, I can only imagine you as a Terran. Actually, you might be a Terran.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
But to answer your question, I'm not looking forward to it. It's going to suck, but I will do it for you, the patrons.
And the patrons also get access to something else. This weekend, we're running a Krosis bossing event in place of the usual round table. And that'll, if you happen to hear this before Saturday, that's happening or has happened on Saturday at 8 p.m. Game time, 4 p.m. Eastern. That'll be in the RSBNB Discord. I'll be there. Tannis will be there. Thaxi will be there. And I've already heard from a number of other people who do plan to show up as well for that. So that's 4 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. game time on Saturday. As it will be happening or it has happened. But if you do want to support the podcast, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. All right. So the question, we had a bunch of questions this week, and we wanted to focus on specifically boss questions related to this. We got a good number of lore questions that are going in the book and will be handled next week or the week after on that. But this question is boss related from Chordo, who says, Hoodspells, this is Chordo, after having missed his when Frank questions, but it's Bic time now. You got to wonder, I guess, where the Bic pens and lighters are for this, I guess we could say. Number one, so Carapac was very nice for PVM scrubs like myself. The Glacier was quite difficult, and Krosis is definitely amazing. Do you think we'll see more skilling bosses in the future?
I hope so.
I certainly hope so.
I hope the answer is yes. Yeah. And we have a good number of these, or I say good number, it's two of them that we went through on a monthly bit a while back. We talked about making Big Game Hunter proper skilling boss because, you know, we're almost there. We could just take it a few steps further to do that. Another one we came up with was a Dwarven convoy duty kind of thing in Keldegrim.
Ooh.
But overall, I do think that it would be good to have more of these. And as long as they nail out what's happening with the public instances and figure out if this is turning people away, because I would hate for there to be a low uptake on this boss, but have it be due to public instance or something like that. So that's my number one caveat, as I mentioned, that I hope that it's not seen as turning people away.
But if we had another one, you could just lower the number and that's going to lower the barrier to entry. Everyone has a buddy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, I don't know.
Make it scale down to two men or one man.
Yeah. You could
appropriately.
Or you
like,
could,
of course this does do, but
we could have duo skilling boss. We could have a solo skilling boss. There's plenty of options out there for it. And I think the most important thing with Krosis is just to prove that the format works and that you can put a drop table on a skilling boss and not have it break the world.
That's the big thing, I think, is that, like, Krosis is, and I hate to say this, Krosis is so eminently boddable because everything happens on consistent time frames. And it doesn't happen to everybody. There's a little randomness, but you can't do the exact same thing every time. You could probably bot this pretty easily. Obviously their bot detection's great, and so hopefully that's not an issue. The thing that I would think, like, the biggest limiter to this for me is that a skilling boss must have a good reason to do it, right? It's the same thing as minigames. So many minigames are now dead because when we were kids, we did them because they were fun. They didn't need to have a benefit. Now we're all adults. And
we've been here that long.
Now that we're all adults, we have this, like, thinking of, like, okay, I'm doing this, but I have this other thing that would benefit me more to be doing right now, you know? It's the, like, I could do this for fun, where it feels, and this is maybe the completionist in me being a little jaded, it feels like we play the game less for fun and more just because it's a thing that we do, because we enjoy the game, because, you know, whatever it is. We do things because we have a goal, we work towards rewards. You know, you got things like Fist of Guthix that awards armors that are not best in slot anymore, that awards odds and ends. People don't play it for fun. People don't play, you know, very, very few things get played for fun. And even like pest control.
Have you seen
kind of
how
things.
Janky Fishing Trawler is in Modern Era?
I know. I mean, Fishing Trawler, like, even some of the like more recent minigames like Soul Wars. Soul Wars is just dead. And it's a ton of fun, but the rewards for it when it came out, there were very few ways to get free like XP from other than training.
Yeah.
And so Soul Wars was the way that you got your untrimmed hit point cape. It was the way that you got your untrimmed Slayer cape.
And I think we also need to be clear that skilling bosses don't necessarily need to be the best in terms of skilling XP, because that's not definitely not what we have at Krosis.
But it's the thing is they give good money. And so the reason people will keep going back to Krosis is because it's decent money. The XP rates are, on the whole, good, although it's not great for any particular skill. The actual XP rates per hour are pretty decent overall. But the thing that will bring people back is that, especially those rares, are worth money. And it is a good use of time to be skilling, and also the drop table is good. And so if they make other skilling bosses, they just need to make sure that they're responsible with the economy, but giving them a drop table that makes them worth doing. And if they do, then I think they'll have good longevity. I think that's going to be the big deciding factor for Krosis, is it doesn't end up being decent
and,
money.
You know, we heard from Shrew and Sponge this week, but we also, of course, have to remember that Jack was on this as a designer, too. So he deserves some credit with this.
Well, you can see Jack's hands all over this, because look at, you know, like what Daxi's talking about being worth money. This boss is worth money because it stretches
and the environment
out and touches so many things, right? Like,
and if there's
it
one
has
thing,
this ecosystem.
And if there's one thing we learned, Jack is good at ecosystems. Just look at mining.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
So that's the balance in this is well done. I think the rewards fit into a pretty good niche. There are a couple of niches obviously left unfilled. I still want a shield bow that's higher than tier 85. Or a thrown weapon that's higher than tier 88.
Well, never say never. You have the full front still.
Oh no, I'm maybe a little hopeful, but capes is my expectation for that. But again, so yeah, they did an incredible job balancing. I think the balancing on this is great. I think this is very appropriately balanced to allow you to make some mistakes in the fight and still win. I think the rewards are good. I think they were well chosen. I think the economy will absorb them very well, and they'll make moves in the economy that are due. I'm a big fan. I think it was very well done overall. Very well designed.
Question two. He's already discussed this with Derp from Clan Quest of the aforementioned four-man guide. Chodo says he doesn't have Bladed Dive and doesn't plan to get it soon. TM. Do contributions drop a lot for a group when one of them doesn't have Bladed Dive? So is it absolutely necessary if you're aiming to get good loot from the boss?
Here's my only math for the night. And to be fair, Derp's guide, that four-man guide aforementioned, does say it is absolutely essential to have Bladed Dive. That is more or less verbatim from that guide. I personally do not agree. We've talked about already how you can surge across the mushroom field. So the primary place you use Bladed Dive for this is mushroom fields. It is also useful getting in from the middle, from the corpse, or from the statue when you have the energy fungus spawning. Just generally moving between nodes sometimes. You can get pretty sweaty with your Bladed Dive because it allows you to move instantly from one place to another within a certain tile range, right? So it is nice to have. It will speed up your kills. If you are not the person on that fishing node, and you have the full elite outfit with your aura and familiar, if you're on hunter or mining, and you don't have Bladed Dive and the rest of your team does, it should not slow down your kills. You still shouldn't be the last one done restoring your statues. With that said, it is an excellent quality of life for this boss. It is being able to cross those mushroom fields without having to line yourself up with that pathway. To land in the pathway halfway through your double surge is very nice. And the process of obtaining later dive obviously does require you to understand and learn the Shattered Worlds minigame, which I will be very frank with you, is enter portal, kill things, enter portal, repeat.
It's not really as bad as it used to be. Right. And I will say that if you do your weekly challenges and you have a weekly reset token, you can get 17 million anima a week from this just by doing the challenges twice.
Right. You can earn the ability in 3 to 4 weeks, especially with reset tokens. You can also, if you've never done the game before, Shattered Worlds has, every time you complete a world for the first time, they go from 1 up until many, higher than people are able to complete. Every time you complete a world for the first time, you earn a large chunk of bonus reward currency. And so if you rush from the first floor to the 115th floor, or 110th floor, I think, the reward currency alone will be enough to earn you an ability, one of the two, either Bladed Dive, which probably is the better starting one, or the Puncture and Salt the Wound, Greater Dazing Shot, Mutated Dazing Shot. And you can do that, I want to say, in less than 5 hours. It's you enter the world, you click the things until they die, and then you move on.
Yeah,
and very straightforward minigame.
Just put this into perspective, I bought both the abilities this week. I was sitting at 55 million anima beforehand, did the challenges on Monday, got the first one, Salt the Wound. Then on reset Tuesday, did that again and pushed another 10 worlds on top of what I was at previously, which brings me up to around 80, I think. And that was enough to get Bladed Dive as well.
So the unlock for that is not incredibly time consuming, and it's a really great quality of life here. But in terms of slowing down your kill speed and decreasing your contribution, not as much. Again, that energy fungus in the middle is the big thing that you would want to maybe Bladed Dive to. And that's worth a ton of contribution points. So it'll lower your personal rewards if you don't have this, I will say. But in terms of slowing down kills, as long as you're not on that fishing node and not on the woodcutting node, maybe too, it probably doesn't make a huge difference to your team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, we might just have to make this, a bi-monthly thing that we do Krosis at a round table or something like that, if there's still the demand for it. And, we can even open that up to the public after this one as well.
Yeah.
So I don't see that as a big problem in terms of getting people to this boss if that's what they want. So,
and for people that are coming, I am planning to be there at least this weekend, and I will give you calls during the fight for when you should be stepping away and going back on for each of those mechanics. So it should be fairly straightforward. We'll make sure you have assigned roles and know exactly what you're doing before we start. There should be no fails at these roundtable kills.
We're going to hold you to that.
You better.
I'll hold
myself to it.
Let's look at the patch notes then. Only a few of them this week, as it is a headliner week. A couple changes to the Glacier front. Resolved an issue that was causing the Sentistan section of the Slayer collection log to be incorrectly marked as complete for some users. I don't know why that's in the Glacier front, but okay. A player on hard mode joining another player's normal mode instance will now benefit from the safe death. Okay. That'd be a scary thought, to do normal mode and have an unsafe death.
Mm-hmm. It's a little extra money. People that are doing hard mode can deal with it. You don't die a lot on hard mode, so they can suck it.
added a link to Treasure Hunter from the Marketplace. Exactly why in just a minute. Improvements to mouse interaction precision. What?
I missed that. I'm sorry.
I don't know where exactly that comes into play. I think this is one of those patch notes that we could have had a deeper explanation on.
Interesting. I don't know about you guys, or especially you, Shane. I've been experiencing a lot of rubber banding, slow response time, and dead clicks in the Krosis instances.
Yeah.
And I put that off on there just being a lot of those instant shards active at once, and that's slowing things down from the server side.
It should.
I hope that wasn't this update.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't think it would be related, but I have felt that as well. And it's not just a Mac problem, because we can answer that too. I also felt it on Windows.
Other people, it's just dead clicks. I've been hearing a lot about dead clicks and slow response.
Cinderbane gloves now correctly apply their poison effect, perhaps too well, because you can poison Krosis with that.
Rumble.
Which
people
should
have been
hopefully
cheesing solo with this.
Which should hopefully be fixed next week. Fingers crossed.
Oh, absolutely.
Feathers of, and finally, Feathers of Mat are no longer destroyed on player death in the Sophonum Slayer dungeon.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, it's been sunshine and roses so far. But I'm going to ruin everyone's day now. Because the Treasure Hunter changes came out this week. And I'm going to be 100% honest. This is a case of Jagex walking into the room and there being $100 sitting on the table and they didn't take the money. They didn't take the money.
Yeah.
This was a huge opportunity that has been missed. So, we knew this was coming because of the Hearts of Ice changes, but the main thing that this brings is probability disclosure as well in terms of showing what the rarity is on all
more
the prizes.
Clarity.
Removing blind chance. And this is one of the big things that we discussed with Maude Warden last year, and he said he was committed to doing, and I commend him and the team for doing this. But this is also a huge missed opportunity because this is just tweaking Treasure Hunter in a way, and I'll go through what an alternate form would look like in just a minute. But first and foremost, Hearts of Ice have gone. They've been converted to oddments. I don't think anybody is going to be disappointed about that. I think there might have been some.
I'm disappointed about that.
Oh, really?
Solely from the fact that the conversion wasn't done properly. There are Iron Men who cannot have Hearts of Ice who got a ton of oddments from this. I don't even know if they can get oddments normally. I had close to 10,000 Hearts of Ice and ended up with 1,600 oddments. There was not a one-to-one conversion. It seems that people were given random numbers.
It was supposed to be one oddment for every 5 Hearts of Ice.
Okay, in that case, I might be on the mark. But it seems like at least some Iron Men, some other people, there were some conversion issues.
How many Hearts of Ice did you say you had?
I believe I had close to 10,000. Like, I have not used them since. The last time I looked, I was at 9,000 some odd hundreds. And I did only end up with 1,600 oddments out of this. So it was definitely less than a 1 to 5. Which is fairly close. I thought it was a 1 to 1.
According to that, you would have about 12,800 oddments. Or Hearts of Ice.
From a 12 to 1, from from a 5 to 1 to 9,000, that would be 1,800. 7.5 to 1 would give me 1,200. But, I mean, again, not a huge deal. I'm sitting on a pretty big pile of oddments. I don't use them very often. But,
anyways.
Yeah, visually, anyways. Yes, go on.
Lots of people. I was wondering if this was just a display issue, but I guess if there are these problems out there, we'll have to watch and see if something is done on that. So we'll put a bookmark in that one for next week. Skilling outfits, Slayer masks, Wicked Hood tokens, the 200 million coin prize has been replaced by 50 million coin prize. Brilliant alchemist fragments and all cosmetic items, except those related to current promotion, have been removed from Treasure Hunter. And they will have added giant stars and giant lamps, a huge coin pouch, which now scales based on your total level, and more portable packs. They've also upped the oddment conversion value by 25% for commons, 20% for fairly commons and uncommons, 20% for rares, and 15% for very rares. And lamps for skills that go to 120 will also now scale based on that. So for archaeology, dungeoneering, slayer, farming, and herblore, and invention.
Which is, I mean, you're getting many hundreds of thousands of XP per lamp for those huge lamps on those skills now. Think old dungeoneering challenges.
So here's the problem. They got rid of Alice, and I thought, okay, you're getting rid of Alice. Take this one step further, and rebrand this away from Treasure Hunter, because Treasure Hunter is a toxic name. Nobody who has an issue with microtransactions likes the name Treasure Hunter. If you want to build goodwill, the correct response here would have been to rebrand away from Treasure Hunter. And what I have done, and everybody can read this in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com, is I've taken their news post and I've edited their news post and just changed the language around a bit. And there's only one thing that I added to this that's in blue that wasn't in the previous post. Effectively, what I have done with this is I've used the same changes that they made and just applied a slight rebranding for it. And I'll just read the first couple paragraphs of this, and you guys can tell me which one you like better. So rather than just changes to Treasure Hunter, or Treasure Hunter changes, the news post title becomes Treasure Hunter is Going Away. Greetings, adventurers. Many of you will have been following the gradual alternations we've been making to Treasure Hunter over the last couple years or so as we work towards building a better experience for everyone. Now we're ready to bring you the news that Treasure Hunter is being removed from the game. There's your pickup to get everyone's attention. The Treasure Hunter experience will disappear on Monday, September 27th, and in its place, we will be launching Time Chess. This is my rebrand that removed Blind Chance. Players have been crystal clear with us that Blind Chance needs to go away, and we need to be transparent with the kind of XP gain they'll earn as a result. Time Chess will communicate chances clearly and will offer improved prizes. And everything else after this, except for the conclusion, was effectively just replacing Treasure Hunter with Time Chests and treating this as an entirely new experience. And adding in that Treasure Hunter keys are also going to be 10% cheaper via the Oddment store, which is the one thing in blue that I put in that I don't really have the authority to put in here and say that this would, you know, be something that they could definitely do. But I don't see how they couldn't have done a rebrand on this just to build some good community goodwill.
Yeah, I think some people are attached to it. I think, you know, I personally am not a huge fan of clickbait titles like Treasure Hunter's Going Away. And we're changing how you get rewards from the promotions. But, I mean, yeah. And again, if they're going to do big changes to this, I agree that I think they've been leaving a lot of things on the table recently from a visual perspective,
yeah.
Kind of like you're saying in terms of rebranding. I mean, I don't know if anybody has opened Treasure Hunter from that team in the last 2 months. I cannot comprehend if you have looked at that terrible particles that are like, you can see the square outside of the Treasure Hunter interface of where these particles are flying out of these chests that's just static in the background that looks so ugly. Like, this is your micro, this is how you guys are making money, is this interface, and it looks like this? Like, that part to me is really wild, that they're making all these changes to this, and they changed the interface, and they did not fix that display issue for this. Like, the core team is, it's responsible for this. See, I don't know. They seem to be leaving a lot of money on the table, like you say, for kind of the perception and...
And, you know, I have long said that the main problem with Jagex's monetization through microtransactions isn't necessarily what they have on offer. It's in the delivery of how it's presented. And, you know, I think it's at this point, Tan, as we go back to the stream where Mod Mike made his first debut.
You know, maybe I've been here long enough to have drunken the Kool-Aid, but no, I think that, to me, it makes a lot of sense. I like the punchy title just because there's such a negative history with Treasure Hunter that I think that little extra could have went a long way.
Yeah, and I mean, unless you have a Steve Jobs in your company, the number one way to fix these problems is to just take them off the table and make them not problems anymore, as in remove the ability for people to complain from them.
Totally remake how people get rewards from the things that when they buy things. Yeah. I mean,
I'm surprised too, because the last few weeks, it looked like the exact opposite was going on, that they're really ramping up.
Oh, they are. Have you seen what's running currently on there? The promotion where you get to build your own prize pool. You got that, but now there's multiple. You get multiples in terms of
You can
of
get
those.
One to three of anything.
It's pretty OP.
They're definitely like, hey, look at our new thing. We made changes. Please use it and see how it is. We're incentivizing you with lots of free stuff. Yeah. I mean, I personally am not opposed to Treasure Hunter. Like,
no.
The games of chance and the gambling aspect of it is questionable for sure, but it's relatively low stakes. In all honesty, you can generally assume what you're going to get if you were to buy a large number of keys. And it doesn't give you like the biggest, craziest advantage. It doesn't give you like a best in slot thing. It doesn't, you know, in terms of game balance wise and health for the game, I think that Treasure Hunter is healthy monetization.
Yeah, it's not. I mean,
it's microtransactions. It's definitely like, those have their own issues.
Well,
it's not wargaming $60 for a premium vehicle in World of Tanks that you can wipe the floor with.
Well, it's not that, and here's the other thing that's not. It's not something that you can stumble into, and I know that sounds crazy, but
yeah.
I have a kid that is just old enough to be into mobile gaming now, and you would be shocked how easy it is for them to just wander into microtransactions.
Oh yeah, especially with
not know how to get out and buy shit.
Oh yeah, like, especially with Touch ID and Face ID, right?
Yeah.
We had to oh my god, it was a whole deal. But
right,
you know, this isn't that. And sometimes I just wish we could have a little bit more perspective. Not us personally, but like the community at large.
And
because I think the changes they made
were good, but it just feels like such a big missed opportunity that it's a disappointment.
But it's always branding.
Yeah.
It's always branding. Like, I do have to give Mod Warden some credit here. He said it wasn't going to be overnight. They were going to try different things, but they were moving in that direction. And I think,
and that was a very controversial segment, because that segment of that show with him made it to Reddit, and nobody believed him.
Right.
Yeah. And, that's not surprising, but here we are. And I think it would have had a bigger punch with your wording, Shane.
I mean, when you look at what has realistically changed from last week to this week, Treasure Hunter still gives, honestly, roughly similar, XP. It gives roughly similar for a lot of things. Yeah. It has less of those outfits and skilling benefit stuff that's, rare chance hidden in it. But Treasure Hunter, as a functional piece of content behind the fancy words and back end of things, seems to be doing roughly the same thing it was doing last week. And they've kind of just told us it's different.
Right. And that's why I feel is that this is a missed opportunity, because they could have made it actually different. Change the name. Change the user interface. And I didn't get a chance to mock up the UI, but I would have built something that was a lot more graphical, kind of like how the Actrack UI is.
Well, and here's the other thing. When you label it a time chest, that's talking about what it really is when it comes to this.
I was wondering if you were going to pick up on that.
Oh no! From what I picked up on it when I read it the other day, but yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about, right? I mean, if you brand it that way, just like every other game does, these things aren't pay to play. It's not a leg. It's to save time. It's to help you with your time. I think it's great, but and it's true. That's the best kind of branding, right? The stuff that is actually true, but just in a slightly different package,
and with a little bit of a punch to it.
I'm on board with you. Missed opportunity.
Yeah, and this is one step to bending reality, but I think we should stop there for this episode. And just imagine what a world it would be if, over time you were able to bring this into the RuneScape player psyche compared to Treasure Hunter and Squeal of Fortune as it was. You'd have a different experience. So, all right. Before we wrap, I just want to mention one special day, because we got the announcement that's happening. Yay. As well, the one special day bundle, which can be purchased for 250 rune coins, Disappears before October 4th. And with this, you get the Felix outfit, which is one special costume, a Felix retexture, which is snowy short hair, 5 aura refreshes, 5 life refreshes, 5 Slayer VIP tokens, and a box of clue scrolls and Iron Man will only receive the Felix outfit and retexture. So this is kind of similar to that other bundle we had, except this goes towards charity.
Right, right. You get a box, and you get a box, and you get a box.
Well, they've been giving out a lot of free rune coins through Prime Gaming and other things.
Yeah. Xbox as well.
Hopefully people will spend that money that Jadex is, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
giving Tannis, other people. Other people are giving a Jadex can give it to charity back.
You have Game Pass Ultimate, right? Did you claim that?
Yeah. No.
35 treasure hunter keys, 200 rune coins, the green imp pet.
What?
3 large protein packs, 3 portable skilling packs, 5 cinder cores, and 5 advanced pulse cores if you have Xbox Game Pass.
Heck yeah. There's a link for it on the front page.
I'll be damned. Okay.
There might be in the news post.
Yeah, it's in the news post.
Right.
So.
Confirmed, RuneScape's coming to Xbox. Watch out.
I'm not ready to make that jump yet.
Oh, controller. Oh, God. Oh, God. The interface is tennis. You have trouble. Imagine.
I know.
Without a mouse.
Yeah. Unless it was converted. Just let me run
They did
around.
It for mobile. They did it for mobile.
Did.
All right.
I'm not hopeful.
Let us move on. I'm going to start with picks of the week this week. I will go first. And this is something that goes back to a website called Good Old Games. I'm sure you guys are familiar with it, but basically it's a game service out there that aims to bring classic video games to the modern computers, and with that the hope that they'll actually run on them, because we're talking about some games that were aimed purely for, you know, Windows 95, 98, and stopped working when we moved to 10 with 7. And one of the ones that they did, and this came out earlier this month, for the 55th anniversary of Star Trek, they brought a number of the Star Trek video games from the early 1990s, 6 of them, to Good Old Games. This includes games like Elite Force and Elite Force 2, which are first-person shooters based on the Quake 3 engine. Star Trek Hidden Evil, which follows the events of the movie Star Trek Insurrection. Star Trek Starfleet Command 3, which was very much a precursor to what we have today in Star Trek Online, flying ships around, and then Bridge Commander, which is effectively you controlling the starship from the bridge, which is one of the things that many people who play Star Trek Online today want as well. And later on, 2 RTS games, and this is where I actually got my start in online gaming, was with these two, was Star Trek Armada and Star Trek Armada 2 are also on the way. And they're available on goodoldgames.com, GOG.com. Each game is $13. So, you know, we're talking about games from the late 1990s. So if you ever wanted to play through one of these again, you could pick them up. And I'm just waiting for a couple people to pick up Elite Force. And then that's probably the one I'll be picking up, plus Armada 2, because I spent a lot of time in those ones. But you can find more about this at GOG.com. It's also linked in the show notes on our website at update.rspmb.com.
Nice. You know, when I went to get the original X-Wing from, I think it was 95, I used GOG. So
yeah, and the reason
definitely
we...
cool.
Reason this was needed is because these games, specifically the online ones like Elite Force and the Armadas, used GameSpy, which of course is a service that is no more. So online ceased to work
fun.
With that.
Yeah.
But that's my pick of the week. Interestingly, Elite Force takes place on the final episode of Star Trek Voyager as they are traversing the sphere back to the Alpha Quadrant. The story behind that and whatnot. So that's my pick of the week. How about yours, Tannis?
Well, mine, once again, we kind of have an anti-pick of
the
week. This is a caution, warning, danger. That's a good reference too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So Amazon is coming out with a robot named Astro. Isn't that cute? It's named after the Jetsons dog. I don't know if that's true. I just know Jetsons dog was Astro. So, but it is basically a home dot or Echo or whatever on wheels with a camera. And it has a drink holder, so someone could open the refrigerator, put a drink in it, and it could take it to someone else because they say it has facial recognition. And it's supposed to learn people coming over to the house and who is who, which is supposed to be a big feature because it's also your security robot.
Yeah, apparently
patrol the halls.
Patrol your house when you're not home.
Yeah, and if it sees someone it doesn't know, it'll call you. So how many times do you think that's going to be, like, I don't know, you? Oh, my Lord. So, you know, obviously, privacy freaking nightmare. It's utterly useless. I mean, there's no reason that you need your Echo to follow you on wheels.
It does have out-of-bounds zones, so you can tell it not to go into certain areas.
Yeah, I've heard reports of, like, people that were involved in its early development just saying it's gonna kill itself. It's gonna commit suicide on stairs the first chance it gets. Like, it's just really dumb.
Also has buttons, and physical buttons to turn off the cameras and microphones.
Because
though apparently it can't move around when they're switched off.
Oh,
it even comes with an extendable periscope camera.
Yeah. Which which I guess that has a known issue of breaking. And if it does, there's no way to, like, ship it back. Just a lot, and it's $1,000. So for the low price of $1,000, Jeff Bezos can not only just listen to you like he has been, but now he can watch. So if you've ever wanted the feeling of a dog watching you with your spouse or partner, now you can feel assured that Jeff Bezos can do it from the comfort of his mansion or yacht or super yacht. Or the yacht that goes on top of that.
Oh, my God. Did you also see they brought out a children's toy that uses projection?
You know, and I'm sad because I want robotics. I want a future with robots. I want droids. I want droids, and I want data. But you can't give us this stupid shit. Like, seriously.
Has to start somewhere. But this is maybe not the best starting point.
Oh, boy. All right. What do you got for us, Thax?
Yes, mine is, as much of anything, a public service announcement. Quick reminder to everybody, I am in the final stages of my training to go into medicine as a career. I got my flu shot today. It's going to be a bad flu season. October is the month to get your flu shot done. Because we were all masking and being careful last year, all of the respiratory viruses kind of went on the down low, and everybody has decreased immunity to them right now. So things like respiratory syncytial virus, if you have a kid, your kid has a friend with respiratory syncytial virus right now. Normally that peaks in January to March. It's normally none of it around this time of year, but it is multiple times that normal spike. It's respiratory viruses are going to go around this year. Everybody will get the common colds. The worst and worst and worst of the common colds is the flu. Please get your flu shots.
All right. Thank you. And, you know, there's other things we also need to protect ourselves from as well. But I think the advice on that is probably best given by what jurisdiction you're in, depending where you are and whether or not the walls are falling down around you on that. So we'll leave that there. We only have a few achievements this week compared to last week, but you can start us off, Tanis.
I was just wondering, Shane, is that how you advocate for the use of condoms?
Oh, no.
I have no response to that. Start your achievements.
Just go, my guy.
So starting with, I battle Slash with 99 wood cutting. And then we have Shamrock Soup with 99 dungeoneering. Then we have a Tanny Keet with 99 defense, all on September 27th. Oh, 28th and 29th.
All right. Well done. Well done. On the 27th, we also have Vapor 13579 with 99 Herblore and Fire Making. River Design got 99 Mining, and Added Darkmoor got 99 Archaeology on the 24th.
Also on the 24th, we had Dennis getting 200 million construction experience. Ozozoyo getting 120 Herblore. On the 23rd, we had Dr. Reggie getting 99 Ranged. And also on the 23rd, Jack BLG with 99 Archaeology. Good job, everybody. Congratulations.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Very cool.
All right. Well, you know, I perhaps had the most interesting week on RS so far with this. So I'll start this. You know, I started the week at Shattered Worlds. I first got the Salt the Wound ability, then after that, Bladed Dive. So that's something I've been putting off for years and is really only possible thanks to that ninja strike we had last year at Shattered Worlds. And I still maintain that that has changed the game for Shattered Worlds, and Shattered Worlds at this point is the best way to showcase RuneScape's graphics outside of Centistan and the combat system all in one encounter. And if you wanted to show someone what RS3 looks like, aside from going to Centistan, Shattered Worlds is probably your best bet, I think, with that. I have also been Elder Woodcutting for a few days, and then yesterday with the offhand as well, so that's fun. But I have also managed, of course, to work in a few Croesus kills here and there. I haven't made use of Free Death Week yet. I wanted to, and I think that's perhaps something Jagex did, is that they put out a boss that doesn't have death associated with it and wanted to see, when you have another headline going, what the usage at regular PVM would be like for that. But that's topic for later, of course. And speaking of Croesus, we got the leg split in our four-man group. And in one of our other groups, when we were playing around with the boss, I got the construction pet.
Yay!
Woo-woo!
So, I don't know. People say that's insane RNG, but we'll just take it. We'll just take it at this point. So, that's what my week on RS has looked like so far. How about you, Tanis?
Doing a lot of the same when it comes to Elderwood cutting. That's pretty much been what I've done since the show last week. After Taxi broke it down in the arrows and figured out where to start cutting some logs. and been doing it ever since. Just picked up the offhand tonight. So giving that a try. It's really it makes Elder cutting a little less painful when it comes to XP. So that's nice. But that was about it. Tried to boss, you know, and hopefully we'll go back and have a better experience on Saturday at the round table.
All yes. Right. Sounds good. And you, Thaxi.
I have been really busy this week. It's been a busy week for me with work. All of my time outside of work has more or less been spent at Croesus, to be totally honest. I did a little bit of the skilling outside, got some other kind of odds and ends done, did my dailies most days. But mostly, yeah, just working on getting that 100 Croesus kill count. And really just diving into and getting to know the boss.
All right, sounds good. And I really enjoyed it this week. So, you know, if you have an interest in trying it, we did say that we will, because this is a new boss, I think we can do the community service of saying that we'll also open this to anybody in the Discord, anyone in the Friends chat, and anyone who hears this by Saturday. Come along. Come join us at Croesus at 8 p.m. game time on Saturday, but I don't believe there's anything else we have to deal with on this episode. So thank you, Thaxi, for being with us, as per usual.
Yeah.
Tanis, as well. Good to have you with us for a front.
Yay!
Yay.
And, of course, if you guys want full episodes, you can do that by subscribing to us. That is indeed the best way. Give us a review and a like on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and more. Also on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. You can find the nibbles there in addition to the full episode. And, of course, a like and subscribe also helps us there. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBnb Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.